Silverlight. My name is Chris Knowlton. I'll be one of the presenters today. We'll have a few folks doing demos as well. And this is a pretty open session. We encourage your questions. There's a microphone up here. We're actually taping this for folks who couldn't make it in person. So if you have a question, feel free to raise your hand. Somebody will bring a mic out to you. We'll start with the agenda. We really just kind of want to talk a lot about the core media platform, which to a large extent, as you'll see, is Expression Encoder, Silverlight, and IIS Media Services today. That's where we're investing a lot of our time and resources. We'll go through a few deployment examples. We'll go step by step through, from a platform perspective, through a lot of the updates that have been made available recently that not everyone's aware of, some of the things that are coming out soon, and also some demos of the capabilities in the platform. And then we'll also have just a final Q&A session if there are questions that you haven't asked throughout the session. So in general, the Microsoft Media Platform is made up of a lot of components. As I mentioned, IIS Media Services is where we're investing most of our time on the media server side these days. Silverlight for the client, the cross-platform, cross-OS client. PlayReady for digital rights management. Expression Encoder for creating all of that content. And then Media Room for that great television experience. And this applies, you know, across devices, across different ways of consuming that content. And then it also, all of these pieces then also play to different types of folks in the content chain. Whether you're building a system or building technology that builds on our foundational technologies or what have you. So let's talk about some of the deployments. We've had a number of good deployments recently. We thought we'd highlight a few of them. Because we thought, not many people go out necessarily write a press release saying, I just had this great deployment and it was on smooth streaming, so you don't always find them by searching on smooth streaming online. But they're out there. Most people have had great deployments and just don't talk about the underlying technology. So one of those is Maximum TV. They have, within just a few months, they grew to 170,000 visits, and now they're the number one site on the web for Hispanic TV content aggregation. So some people refer to it as the Hulu for Hispanics. So it brings together a lot of Spanish language TV content, and it's reaching out to 20 to 30 million broadband connected folks in the US today. So this is all built on Silverlight and smooth streaming. Another example is Portugal Telecom built a service called Mio. And so this is the largest telco group in Portugal. They have over 4 million fixed line customers and 7 million mobile customers, 700,000 ADSL customers. So they have presence in Brazil, Africa, and Asia as well, with even higher numbers there as far as the folks that they're reaching. And so they built out a complete system using IIS, IIS Media Services, smooth streaming, Silverlight for playback that seems to be going really quite successfully. And in fact, what they do now, what will happen is, in time, they'll actually also integrating this into their a Media Room offering so that it actually becomes one large combined set of technologies, taking our smooth streaming technologies, which Media Room has now deployed as well, and mixing those all together into a single service. The next one is Swisscom. Swisscom delivers mobile and fixed line telephony and internet services to everyone in Switzerland, essentially. it did quite well with the TV services, and now they have offered their TV service online as well as part of a monthly service. So again, another good example here where folks are using it for sort of that over-the-top experience where you can get stuff now from mobile or television. DeltaTray built a really nice sports application on Microsoft Silverlight. It's called Diva, Data Integrated Video Application, and allows you to really watch a nice integrated experience where you get stats and players and information in one very nice user interface there that goes across desktops and across mobile devices. It's good for live sports and on-demand sports, and it has deep social media integration. This one is TV2 Norway. TV2 Norway was one of the earliest adopters of smooth streaming, and actually for over a year now, I think a year and a half now, have been offering a live subscription service based off of smooth streaming. Streams up to 6 megabits per second, very nice high quality 720p. And so they're doing, you know, pay-per-view and subscription built on this platform. So again, another I think another proof point, because and in that region, a lot of other companies tend to do what TV2 does, or actually build on their platform white-labeled. So another good proof point for the platform. And then Canal Plus, this is a recent development. Canal Plus in France, they have over 10 million subscribers there and offer 26 premium channels. They offer a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of different distribution networks, and they have their own movie studio. They have a premium live TV web service with 5 HD channels. And so this is, they have a number of services coming out. They're in the middle of a set of deployments. Right now they're migrating from Windows Media and Flash to Silverlight and IIS, including to delivery to the Xbox. So some of the features in their player include multi-language audio, the ability to do DFXP, subtitles, and real-time sparse stream metadata ingest for the timeline markers. So then the next few slides here, really the bulk of the slides here and the rest of the discussion, I'll put into the frame of the workflow. All of you, I think, probably, I'm going to guess, are familiar with the workflow. I do it. It helps me just as I'm thinking through all the pieces so that I'm not bouncing around it too much, to kind of go in order from where you get the content to where that content's consumed. So I use this kind of as a guide to kind of keep everything centered. So we'll start by actually going right to Expression Encoder. We have a number of partners who provide encoding. Expression Encoder, of course, is the Microsoft product. Did you want to speak to it, or would you like me to? Okay, let's do that. So I'm going to bring up Emily Anderson then, who's the product manager for Expression Encoder, to talk through these points.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, I think this mic is working. So as Chris said, I'm the product manager for Expression Encoder, and I think I'd like to start off just by talking about Microsoft's commitment to video technologies and encoding in particular. It's been a long journey. It kind of began with NetShow back in 1996, and that quickly evolved into Windows Media Encoder, which was a fantastic tool for encoding VC1 content. But over the past 5 to 10 years, we've seen a lot of changes in the streaming media industry. There's new codecs emerging, like H.264. There are new playback experiences enabled by things like Silverlight. And there are a ton of new devices like the iPad, like Windows Phone 7, that consumers want to view their video on. And so with that, we've had to change the way that we approach encoding. And so we evolved Windows Media Encoder into Expression Encoder. This product was launched about 4 years ago. And to be clear, Windows Media Encoder is no longer supported. We're encouraging our customers to move from Windows Media Encoder to Expression Encoder. And so as a result, we've spent the last 4 years or so really making sure that the features and functionality that were in Windows Media Encoder are also included in Expression Encoder. So it's very easy to encode VC1 content, but you can also do H.264, you can do Silverlight, and you can make great, great media experiences with Silverlight in Expression Encoder 4. So what exactly is Expression Encoder? It's a lot of different things. It's a post-production tool. It's a video editing tool. There's a screen capture utility. You can do compression, and you can output it to the web. But I think the best way to think about it is in a couple of different scenarios. The first one is user-generated content. So let's say you want to record your kid's soccer game and share that with grandparents that are on the other side of the country. Take Expression Encoder, compress your video, use the Silverlight template, output it, and in 5 minutes you can share that content with your family wherever they are. Oops, can we go back? The second thing is obviously video in the enterprise. Windows Media Encoder is omnipresent throughout the enterprise, and we're working to make sure that enterprises are migrating to Expression Encoder. So let's say you have training content and you want to share that with your field. With Expression Encoder, you can now put that to SharePoint, so people on-premise can view it on the web. You can also transmux it and have training or field people that are on the go view it on their iPad. Windows Phone 7, other devices that we support. We have a library of about 100 different presets to enable scenarios like that. And then finally, there's live broadcasting. So We're seeing a lot of sports broadcasters, for example, take live content, use smooth streaming, and deliver that to thousands of viewers. And regardless of their bandwidth, they can have a really high quality experience. Can we go next? Okay. So I think. Perfect. Okay. Thanks. So beyond the abstract, let's talk about some live scenarios that we're seeing. So this was a music festival in Poland that took place a few months ago. And Insys, this ISV, it's a Microsoft Gold partner, they used Expression Encoder and Smooth Streaming and PlayReady DRM and basically broadcasted this concert live to 30,000 plus people across Europe. So the artists could perform and share their content without violation of copyrights. And then users, even if they were in really, really remote areas, could view and have a great experience without being actually at the show. So that's kind of one of the more obvious use cases, but there's a couple more that are perhaps more interesting. So medical images. Typically, radiologists, if they want to view images and make diagnoses, they wait in line at a hospital so they can view the images on premise and then make their diagnosis and communicate that to the patient. But Siemens wanted to bypass all of that. And so what they did was take Expression Encoder, compress those images, and then deliver them on the fly in high enough quality that the doctors could actually make diagnoses and communicate them to their patients on the go, saving both time and money for the hospital and improving the care for the patient. And then finally, we have security feeds. So typically, when you think about security guards, like in a data center, you think about five or six security guards sitting in front of tens or hundreds of TVs just monitoring images. But what iStream Planet did, in fact, was take those security feeds and stream them to iPads so that security guards could walk around physically on-premise, carry their iPad, and be able to monitor both ways, which I thought was pretty cool. So those are some of the more unusual use cases that you can see with Expression Encoder. So moving forward, I mentioned that we released V4 back in June. And with that, we're offering direct volume licensing. So we're having partners such as yourselves, ISVs, IHVs, that need a battle-hardened encoding technology as well as access to proprietary codecs. They can integrate Expression Encoder with their own solutions, say media management consoles that go into the enterprise, and then sell that directly to the end user with a more robust solution. In a couple of months, you'll see a service pack. One of the top features that we're offering with that is GPU acceleration of H.264 content with NVIDIA CUDA cards. So I think with this, we're really moving towards a new class of hardware. Take your software encoder, a workstation, or even a high-end laptop and a CUDA card, and you're seeing performance that just was not available even a year or two ago, doing 10 streams, things like that. So we're excited about that, and you'll see a sneak peek of that in a few minutes with a demo. And then finally, we're moving towards even more complex scenarios, high-performance computing, encoding in clusters, as well as encoding in the cloud. And so we're really looking to talk to you guys about what scenarios you're seeing today and how you anticipate that changing over the next 12 to 18 months in terms of moving towards the cloud so that we can make sure we have the right tools and platforms for that. So with that, Jamie Lang, our program manager, is going to come up and show you some new features.
Thanks, Emily. So let's go over here. Hi, I'm Jamie Lang. I'm a PM on the Expression Encoder team. So what I'm going to do today is I just want to demo, kind of go a little more in depth on, I don't know if you guys are at the keynote, Chris did a demo of the workflow. I'm going to kind of delve more on the encoder section of that and kind of along the way show you some of the new features we're adding in our service pack that Emily talked about. So one of the first questions we get a lot is, I have this hardware, I have this workflow, I want to do smooth streaming. What kind of bit rates, what kind of streams, how many streams can I do? With the plethora of hardware, different configurations out there, that's kind of a loaded question. And we're working kind of trying to demystify kind of what that means, and this kind of have metrics and says this machine can do this many streams at this bit rate, and we're working on kind of get that going forward. We also released a tool on our Expression Gallery website that will try to simulate a live broadcast on the hardware. So you can, it'll iterate basically. You say, give it a file, give it a preset. Actually, let me show, I'll walk you through it as I do it because that'll be interesting. So this is a live performance tool. Basically, it just tries to do encoded video in real time without dropping frames, and that should basically simulate a very high quality broadcast when you're just popping up over the web. It's not kind of, this is the end, I get this preset and it's done. It's kind of a good starting point on what your hardware is capable of. So right now it does a file local source and it just tries to archive it back to the same system in real time. So you pick a content and then you can pick a preset. These are basically all the live presets that you would see in Expression Encoder 4 right now. My demo, I want to go out and try to and do the iPad transmuxing, so I'll pick the iPad preset. And then this will basically gives you your fault tolerances and how much frame drop you want to do. I'm going to set my encoding time to 30 seconds because basically what this will do is it'll just take the whole file, try to encode it. It's not working. And down below, you won't see this in the tool that's up in the gallery, but along with our SP1 build, we were going to reship this tool, which will actually be able to enable you to test CUDA-enabled TARDs as well, as so you can do CPU or GPU and kind of determine the number of streams based on if you have the ability of doing an NVIDIA GPU technology. So I'm going to turn that on. I'll turn on CPU Assist, basically lets the encoder decide how many streams does it stick on the graphics card, how many streams does it do in CPU. It offloads the balance, and we do some kind of management to make sure the right streams are going to the right process. So basically starts off with three streams. This is actually, this is a, I'm going to pick the higher one, so this one starts out here. So it's doing five streams. It's going to go through and try to encode that in real time. If it fails, it's going to drop down to four streams, try the same thing, trying to go under the fault tolerance. So it'll basically stop on the number of streams that has, you'll have zero drop frames throughout the whole process. This takes a while, and it's pretty boring, so we'll stop that. You can basically, once it's finished, you'll be able to hit the Save Preset button. That'll save the presets that Expression Encoder can read it on the app, and it'll save it right into the correct directory for the encoder. So now I can launch the encoder. I want to do a live broadcast, so I pick my live broadcasting project. And here's the UI for the encoder. So instead of doing a webcam or a file source this time, what I'm going to do is in our service pack, we're adding the ability of allowing you to pick your live screen capture. So this is a Windows Media Encoder feature that we had a lot of feedback in, so we've added that into our service pack. It allows you to basically pick a rectangle. I can pick different pieces. I want to tell it to minimize while I encode, so I don't get any encoder pieces. So let me pick that and pick my... Oh, there's no audio device in this thing. Dun, dun, dun. So now you can see I go over to the preset panel, and I can go look over here, and I've got my media session. That's the preset that I ran earlier from the perf tool. So I click on that, applies it. On the encode panel, you'll see all the number of streams that it can do. So this one can do five streams. That's pretty straightforward at a pretty decent bit rate at the high stream. It's doing H.264 main. That's what needed to be supported from the iPad. If you want to get into the details, we've added a huge section of advanced codec settings, so you can kind of twiddle with the bits and get your quality kind of more optimized towards your specific hardware, but for the most of the defaults are optimized for most content. So once I've got that set up, I can go to my output tab, and here's where I want to connect the encoder to the ISS media services. So go over to the media server, or the ISS manager. I've installed the ISS Media 4 plugin to be able to add live smooth streaming publishing points. So I will wait for this to load. And basically, I just need to go add a publishing point to my default publishing point. So down here at the bottom, when I have the ISS Media 4 installed, I will see a live smooth streaming publishing points option. If I click on that, I have the ability of adding multiple publishing points depending on what my needs are. This was the one I was using before. I'll go through and add a new one. And this is media session. And your estimated duration basically helps the seek bar know how long the duration is going to be on the template playback. So if I say I'm going to do this for 5 minutes, on the advanced tab, it's set up automatically to do archiving, so you can get DVR controls of live smooth stream events and or video on demand after the broadcast is finished. Check that. Clutching this start publishing point will automatically start the publishing point when the encoder starts, so it saves you a step from starting it beforehand. And I'm going to be outputting to the iPad. So on the mobile device panel or tab, I need to check enable output for mobile devices. And this kind of sets the segment lengths. These are all kind of defaults, tells you kind of what the max, how many bit rates you're doing. If you're doing 10, depending on where your bit rates are at, you want to basically limit the iPad, since it'll be over wireless, to not the 1080 stream. You'll want to kind of bring it down a little bit. And so we leave it at 3,000 is a pretty decent mark. So once I've got that started, I know it's called mediasession.isml. I go back in the encoder, and on the publishing point, I point directly to that ISML file. Then I click connect, and it's connected, so now I'm ready to do that. And I could just start right now. The problem is I don't know who's going to be able to see this, how this is going to go back. So one of the other features we've added in Service Pack 1 is the ability of generating templates for live events before the event is started. So I can go through here and I can pick a template. The one difference between this and on-demand is I have to generate all the template files before I start broadcasting, so they're available to the users as soon as they start. So I click the Generate button, and I can either have the choice of publishing it locally, copying just files locally, or publishing it up to a server through WebDAV. So since my server, this PC is my server, I'm going to just copy it down to the same directory and generate the files. And it's demos there. So now basically what we have is I have the template that generates two files. It generates these two M2TS file and a default HTML file web pages, and then it generates all the zaps for the Silverlight Media Player. So the two web pages, the default one is for PCs. You point your PC users to your web server URL for the default HTML, and you would point your iPad or your iPhone users to the M2TS HTML. And if you look into those files, they're already they all link back to the publishing point that you've specified with the correct declaration so that it can be started right away. So now that I've got all that kind of set up, I can just hit start. It minimizes. I'm encoding my screen in this little area. I can start this again. And then that should be over here. Go on to my iPad. Sorry. Refresh. Connecting. Refresh. Yeah, these iPad, the iPad always seems to take a while. Let me see how many seconds I've had recorded. So that's the only one I'm having wireless issues again with this demo, as usual. So that's basically it. I mean, once we start, it'll stop, and you would be broadcasting if you could get it. Yeah?
The testing app, were you testing the bandwidth that you had also, or just the...
It's really just testing that you can...
The CPU and GPU.
Yeah, I mean, basically just testing if you can file archive a machine. So basically you're taking into effect, like, the disk rate, so... As it's basically just taking a file and pushing it back onto the same disk in real time. Just trying to use the encoder to do it without dropping any frames. So you have, like I said, that's why it's a starting point. It's kind of a good baseline that you should be able to do at least that, because, if you're using a live device instead of a file source and there's different formats, the decoding of that might be a little bit more intensive, or, network bandwidth shouldn't matter too much. So you should be able to gain a little bit more, but it's just kind of gives you a starting point for further tweaking your, instead of just starting from scratch or starting from a preset and trial and error, we kind of say, okay, we've iterated, this is where you start at. You may be able to tweak it up or tweak it down depending on what you're seeing. Like you were seeing here, I was getting a little message that was saying I was dropping a lot of frames. Well, not thinking, I started the perf tool again, which is also using the encoder and is also trying to use up all the CPU, so they were basically fighting over each other. So knowing that if I was doing other things on this PC, what generated that preset will not work on that machine because they're basically, it's CPU intensive, so it's if I do multiple things on there. So depending on what your already CPU load is and what you're trying to do to encode, it gives you that. So you could run the perf tool in your environment with all your thing, all, everything else that'd be running on that machine while you're encoding, and that would give you a lower number, but you would know that you wouldn't be hitting a max bandwidth issue.
Yeah, because we struggle with at these venues with having the bandwidth, reliable bandwidth, and so you know you're coming in with 4G cards and doing strange things like
that. Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing as iPad. It's more the wireless setup, and yeah, every presentation usually has...
I can get a GoFast encoder, but it's the, you know, how reliable...
Yeah, I mean, and really, because, I mean, from this machine, since I'm actually just broadcasting or encoding to the exact same machine, then that, you know, that's gone. But then from the server to the device, that's where the bandwidth issue. So you know you're going to be getting a high... That should tell you that you're getting a high-quality encode to the server. If you publish it to another server, I mean, that's the one thing we need to work on in going forward. The evolution of the perf tool is, one, come up with some reference material so that we can say, these boxes do this number of streams. The perf tool, we need to be able to add it so that you can simulate a real live event and not just a file archive. But yeah, that's working on the future. But this is kind of just hopefully being people that have had a Windows Media infrastructure and they want to switch over to smooth streaming to give them, here's my hardware. Do I need to get anything else? Do I need something new, or can I use this on my existing, and what can I possibly do? So it's
one other quick question. My clients want to not have this standalone default player, and they say, well, why can't we do like we do on YouTube, where we go over there and cut and paste an iframe and put it into my HTML, an existing HTML page?
Right.
Is there anything coming up down the pike that would make that real easy?
From it, like just an embed code?
Yeah, just, you know, they just want to do an iframe of the player.
I mean, you can embed the whole player. I mean, if you embed that HTML page into an iframe.
But they don't want to do the whole, you know. The whole.
Yeah, I mean, the player itself can't be embedded because the HTML page, the HTML page has all the playlist information. It has a lot more information than just the player's physical, the actual physical zap. The default HTML contains the playlist information, kind of different other things that we queue off of. So you kind of need to keep that in the page as well.
I think if you turn to Scott Stanfield at your left there, he can probably tell you more about embedding player windows.
It's vertigo.com/olympics, and there's an example of embedded player, just an object tag.
So vertigo.com/olympics for an example of that? Great.
All right. Small embeddable video player.
Thanks, Scott.
It's not an iframe. It's an actual.
Another question.
Surprise. What about the possibility of, you know, doing the additional streams, like on the server side? So, like, we have a lot of customers that are streaming from really, they probably could at best only encode one stream at a time. But, you know, we would like to, in real time, potentially create the lower bitrate versions on our back end.
Right. From an encoder standpoint, I think that's kind of more of a, I don't know who would talk to that the best, if that's the, because I know that's coming or being talked about, but not quite.
There's the capability, I think, to encode a single, the highest bit rate that you can and push it up. You're talking about basically up your upload bandwidth, right?
Well, there's the upload bandwidth from our clients, and then also just that they are sometimes using netbooks when they're doing their recordings. And
I see.
And maybe they're running a demo on the screen at the same time, and there's really very, very limited CPU. Mm-hmm. So we don't really want to have, we would like to deliver to the viewers multiple streams, but we don't want to chew up that much CPU time on the recording PC.
Right, so basically you need a single encode at the client, and then you need to push it to another encoder perhaps, and then break it down into the smooth streaming bit rates.
Yeah,
you could do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, just really, as long as you can actually get the file, Well, so the file is not finished. In a live scenario, that would be something we'd have to work on.
So, I mean, we definitely already do it after the fact, but I'm, you know.
Yeah, that's
about live streaming. In a live stream,
that would be a little more of a, we'd possibly be able to transmux it on the fly, but I don't think you'd be able to re-encode it.
And ideally, I'd like to only actually use the CPU if someone's requesting that, but, you know.
Yeah. So maybe a feature request is to do live feed ingestion and then break it down into smooth stream. We've had a number of folks ask for that, too.
Yeah. And we've also been able to have, like, you know, we've had requests for IP cameras or other things where you can literally just pick another encoder that's spitting out, say, Windows Media or smooth streaming as one stream up to a server, and then that comes in as another into the other encoder as just another. I point to the URL and it's getting that stream, and then I could do the transcoding from there.
Exactly.
So we've had requests for that. It kind of feels like that's somewhat probably would work for your scenario as well. Cool. I don't know. Are you coming back up?
If you're done.
I'm done.
All right.
Cool.
Thank you. All right. Let me switch back here to the other computer.
Oh, now it works.
It's working. See. All right. Next, let's talk about IIS Media Services. For a number of years, what we have been using for our media server until about 3 or 4 years ago was Windows Media Services. In fact, we just released another version of that a few months ago. But IIS Media Services is really where we're investing most of our time and energy right now. It provides a number of advantages, we think, and going forward, as I'll talk about as we go a little bit ahead here, it will provide a lot of advantages that make it a better choice than Windows Media Services sometimes. Okay, so IIS Media Services is really just part of Windows Server. Just think of it that way. Today you get Windows Server. In fact, you get Windows 7. IIS itself comes on both flavors of the all flavors of Windows. But generally, when people are using it in a production environment, they're doing it on Windows Server. And Internet Information Services is the web server, and that comes that's what I was trying to say. It comes in any version of Windows. And on top of that, we have a free download called IIS Media Services, which is just a set of extensions, which you see showing up here, that allow you to deliver media in a much smarter way than you can with just a regular web server doing a standard progressive download. And so I'll talk a little bit about each of these over the next few slides, just for those of you who may not be familiar with what we can do and in some aspects here where we're going. So bitrate throttling was the first thing we released. It allows you to essentially take a progressive download and throttle the delivery of it. And the advantage to that is, if you think of a scenario like YouTube, where you go to watch a video and you click play and you see the red bar fill up as it on your cable modem, you download the whole file. By the time you get to 20 seconds and realize you don't want to watch it, you've already downloaded the whole file. If you're the person who's paying for that bandwidth, that download, then you've just spent a lot of money that you didn't need to. So bitrate throttling essentially bursts down the first few seconds so somebody gets a really fast startup, and then it throttles it out just like a streaming server. If you look at the network graph, it's identical. You see a spike, and then you see level off. If somebody seeks ahead, it automatically bursts the data again and then throttles it back. So the nice thing is what you're really paying for is just a few more seconds of data delivery than the user actually uses, no matter how much they watch. The other nice thing about bitrate throttling unrelated to media is that it allows you to deliver any file or MIME type. So if you have very big data files that you want to dribble across a network at 3 a.m. at 300K, you can just specify, I want to take that DBX file or that PPTX file or whatever it is and push it across at a certain time. So it's very nice as far as being able to control the amount of bandwidth you use when delivering content from a web server. The next thing is IIS web playlists. For those of you who are familiar with client-side playlists, the ASX file, or server-side playlists in Windows Media Services, WSX file, this sort of makes a hybrid. It becomes a hybrid of the two. It essentially delivers an ASX file to the client, but inside the URLs are tokenized. So now nobody can go just into their browser cache, find the URL to your premium content, and hand it off to their buddies and skip your playlist and your ads and everything else completely. The other thing that web playlists allows you to do is it does server checks every time one of those tokenized URLs comes in, and it makes sure that the person requesting that URL is the same person who requested the playlist in the first place. And if they're not, then it rejects the request. But if it is, then it delivers the content. And it has to be in the sequence that it was requested. So again, if you have an ad and then a piece of premium content, it ensures that the person who requested it originally is the person requesting it now, and that they're playing it back in the proper order. So it's basically a server-side control over a client-side playlist. And you can use it with bitrate throttling. The next thing, and what's been one of the most popular items and we're spending a lot of time on, is smooth streaming. And smooth streaming is that ability to use HTTP and all the power of all the caching networks and CDNs out there and scale your content to the widest number of users without having to spin up a completely separate streaming server overlay network as you would with traditional streaming. It delivers the content adaptively, so whoever has low bandwidth gets just as much content or the highest bit rate that they can get. Somebody with high bandwidth gets great 720p streaming. Somebody who has variable bandwidth or maybe a computer where they're trying to multitask and do several things at the same time will get whatever bit rate their processor can render and their network will allow at any given moment based on their local condition. So it literally gives to a user the best content they can get at any given moment for their local conditions. And we'll talk more about that as we go forward here. Advanced logging is the capability on IIS to extract information either as you're sending out a stream to a client and logging it so you know exactly what you've delivered, and also on the client side to get information back. So if you're familiar with Windows Media Services logging, what you could do with that environment, this is somewhat similar in the sense that you can now have server-side logs, client-side logs, you can merge them together. It has a couple of advantages. Unlike Windows Media Services logs, which just munged everything into one big database, you can also specify filters. So you can say all my streaming that goes to Acme Corporation, if you're delivering to multiple clients, comes back and it goes, all the logs go into this particular database or this particular file. So when that customer comes back and says, please give me a running total of who's watching my content, you don't have to go filter through all your logs. You just say, here's a view of all the data that showed up in your logs today. The other nice thing about the way it's built is that you can also have a centralized logging server. So you can say, all right, I'm going to send out a bunch of logs, but I want them all to go back to this different URL. I'm going to specify, when I deliver the content to the client, I will specify that all the logs go back to a different server than the one that delivered it. So you can have a distributed distribution network, but then have everything go back to a centralized server log or log farm. Application request routing. See, I can't even say it. It's such a beautifully it's a great name. We call it ARR because it's easier. It's really the cache proxy from a media perspective. It's really the cache proxy capabilities in IIS. It's an extension for IIS. It allows you. It was built essentially to be a front end across web farms when you wanted to build tiers or a CDN. With all the caching capability, in fact, you can build a CDN now. And in fact, our CDN network within our own company and several other companies that we're working with have built out their caching networks now using IIS and the ARR module because it actually provides more power and more flexibility than other sort of equivalents like SQUID that are available on the web. So this is how, when you're building out a scalable network for yourself or a tiered distribution network within your infrastructure, you can use ARR then to distribute the content in a smart way. And it works especially well with smooth streaming because each cache can be aware when you're doing a live event. Let me give you the scenario. If you're doing a live event and you have 10,000 people suddenly request the same fragment, and that's quite possible during a live event with a lot of people watching, you don't want each cache to go, oh, I don't have that one yet, I'll send back a request, and it sends back 10,000 requests to the origin and brings it right to its knees. You want that cache to be smart enough to go, oh, I've already got 9,909, I've got one request, I'm going to hold the other 9,999, go get the one request, and then fill all with that one response. So it does that sort of request consolidation, which is much smarter than your typical cache. So with IIS Media Services 4, which we just released 5 weeks ago, we introduced a lot of new functionality, but the two major buckets are first around the clients. One, you can now reach Windows Phone 7, which I demonstrated earlier today. And it allows you to create an application, just another Chevrolet app that you drop onto the phone, and somebody can download through the App Store, and uses smooth streaming. So you get that great smooth streaming playback on a Windows phone. So again, just another Silverlight app, just like you'd have on the desktop. You have a Silverlight in the browser. Here you have a Silverlight app on your Windows phone. Let me pause for a minute. Eric, if you want to come set up, there's a laptop here you can, you'll be able to pull out after John is done with it. And what that's built on is the Silverlight Media Framework, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, which is available today, including a template which you can download, put in your URL, and deploy it to a phone today, so you can try it without having to build anything for the phone. Essentially, if you can deploy an app to a Windows phone, you can try this today with Smooth Streaming. The other thing that we showed, and which Jamie was just showing here a moment ago, was the ability to stream to iOS devices. So whether it's iPad, iPod, or iPhone, you can now encode once in the Smooth Streaming format with Expression Encoder or one of our partner encoders and deliver that content across a wide set of devices because we, in IIS, will actually transmux the content on the fly. Basically, we are repackaging the content from the Smooth Streaming format and putting it into the HTTP live streaming format that Apple uses natively within QuickTime. Yes, what is the... You have a question. Let me... I'll repeat it. Go ahead.
Yeah. The stream for video on demand, subsequent video on demand, does the iOS version get laid down at the same time, or is that a separate process?
Oh, the question is, if you're delivering it to both iOS...
So one stream going up, and it's going out to...
Yeah.
And I've designated to save it.
Uh-huh. So the question is, if he's delivering one stream from the encoder, Smooth Streaming presentation from the encoder to the server, and then delivers it out to iOS and Silverlight clients, does it actually archive both types for on-demand playback later? And the answer is yes. It actually archives both sets. If you're just doing a live broadcast and you don't need to archive both sets, then you can just archive the Smooth Streaming and use that for on-demand later.
Can I back up to then?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I think I understand your question to be, can I push a single stream from the encoder to the server and then break it out into separate bit rates there?
Right.
Or do I have to send up multiple streams? And in fact, as what Jamie was showing earlier, is you push up multiple streams. So you specify in the encoder, I want to do five streams, let's say from 500K to 2 megs or something, 2 megabits per second. You push that up as a single, either as a single stream with five tracks in it or separate streams. And then that gets just, on the Apple side, just gets transmuxed in, or repackaged into that format. But you are sending separate streams from encoder to server.
Because you need the bandwidth.
You do need the bandwidth, yeah. I think what your question earlier and the other gentleman's too was more about, can I push a single stream up and then break it out from there? And that's one of the scenarios around which we've been getting a lot of questions, and we're trying to figure out how best to solve that because we understand that a lot of folks will be out at a remote venue and, as you said, having to go over a 4G connection or something to get bandwidth, and we want to help solve that. So we'll take that as additional feedback for that scenario. Some of the things that people, even those who realize that we can deliver now to iOS devices, don't realize is that we have a lot of advanced functionality there for those iOS devices. It's not completely stripped down. You can do live DVR, so pause, rewind, and seek. You can also do archiving of that content, which is what we just talked about. You can have that content archived separately for playback later. You can do archive segmentation, so if you're doing a 24/7 broadcast, you can actually take that archive every hour, let's say, and take it off your server so you're not filling up your drives. AES encryption, another one that a lot of folks have asked for. If a content owner has premium content and they're protecting it and they've okayed AES encryption as the format for doing that, we can apply that as we're sending out the content to those devices as well. And then also B-frame support, which allows you to have a better quality. You can have better quality for the same bit rate. And the last thing is that we have iOS 3.0 compatibility. So for those folks who are running the older OS, which doesn't have quite the same set of features, we can dumb it down for those devices. Yes. Question. Do we handle metadata and closed captioning for iOS? And the answer is no. Today we do not do that. Is that a feature request, Olivia? Okay. The next thing, the other big group of things that we really, our major feature set, I guess I should say, that we released is around our low latency live smooth streaming. And this is the ability to deliver content with less than 2 seconds of latency, end-to-end latency on a managed network. And this has been critical for a number of our customers, especially those in the financial industry. Think Bloomberg News, which is actually what you see here, the Bloomberg terminal down here, being delivered with smooth streaming with sub 2 second latency. And that's very critical for traders who are sitting there pushing a button. They don't want them to make a trade 20 seconds late because they're watching a latent stream, right? Critical for them, critical for folks in surveillance type scenarios, gaming, which I might say is gambling, actually, not to be confused with online gaming, really. Those kinds of scenarios where money's on the line, latency can be pretty critical. It's not available yet on Expression Encoder, but it is available from a number of our encoding partners to do that low latency streaming, as we demonstrated at IBC in September. We also had a number of sort of more generic type improvements on IIS Media Services around the live smooth streaming capabilities. One that I demonstrated earlier this morning was the ability to do to see the runtime status. As you're publishing out your content, it used to be that you really couldn't see what was happening from the server side. Now you can see either a summary of all the streams that have been selected for a publishing point, or dive into the details and actually see fragments and times and numbers and everything around that. So you get a real good sense of how well your server is handling the data that's coming through from the encoder to the end users. We also have manifest compression, which makes it easier if you have a really big manifest. Because you're running a long session, we can actually compress that so that there's a faster startup time for a client joining in the middle or near the end of a presentation. Similar, not quite, it's the same as the iOS metadata question, but we do support RDF format metadata delivery from the encoder to the server now. And just some basic cleanup on the server as far as finding better ways to make use of our resources. We reduced the memory usage. We found better ways to do disk access, so we could get higher server performance overall, and dedicated fragment caching. As smooth streaming is delivered typically in 2 second fragments, and if we have dedicated caching for those fragments, then we have to go in memory, we have to go back to the disk fewer times, and so we make better use of disk and disk management there. Going forward over the next few months, there are a few things we've already started talking about, and I want to just highlight a little bit. One is something called one-click. Well, this may not be the branded name, but we're calling it informally one-click PlayReady. And this is the ability within the IIS user interface to just check a single box, similar to what Jamie and I did earlier when streaming to iOS devices, check a box that says apply PlayReady DRM. No need necessarily for delivering from a single server to a set of clients. You don't necessarily have to go out now and buy a PlayReady SDK or go spend a lot of money with DRM licensing for simple one-play scenarios. You know, if somebody needs to play it once and no special business rules applied, then this is the answer for you. If you have to have some special rules, like I want the user to play it twice within a 24-hour period, or I want to deliver to 1 million users at once, chances are you don't want to try scaling this out yourself over your web farm, and then you still work with one of our PlayReady DRM service providers, which will already have that whole infrastructure built out for you. But for folks who are doing it to a small audience and have that DRM encryption requirement, it's going to be make it a lot easier to get started. And unlike something like stream encryption, like the AES encryption iOS, this doesn't just protect it on the wire, but it also protects that content both on your server, on the client once it's in their cache. So it's protecting the content beyond just the wire. The other big feature that we've talked about coming out soon for IIS Media Services is smooth multicast. One of the things that has prevented us from more vigorously recommending IIS Media Services in the enterprise is that most enterprise customers who are delivering to thousands of users use multicast so they don't bring down their internal network. With smooth multicast, we'll have that capability this coming spring to deliver content to thousands of users with a single stream or single set of streams. Multicast streams that the end user's client will switch between depending on their capabilities. And some people say, well, if I'm in the enterprise, why would I need to switch between streams? And the scenario we face here, at least at Microsoft a lot, is that we have people in different locations where the network has different volatility and different things are going on. Or we have people wandering around on notebooks like mine and going to different meetings, and they go behind a post somewhere, and their wireless bandwidth drops, and they still want to watch that town hall with Steve Ballmer. You can do that now with Smooth Multicast. It will adapt as conditions change. And we'll have more about that in the months ahead. And then we also have something else called IIS Transform Manager, which we'll talk about later, and you'll actually see a demo on. All right, so going back to the workflow, sort of our touchstone here for a moment, I want to talk about transcoding, which spans over both the encode and deliver sections, and sort of tell you a little bit more about some of the options available for handling content in that sort of in-between phase. The first is the Smooth Streaming Format SDK, and this enables you to build your encoding and workflow products for smooth streaming just built on our SDK rather than building something from scratch based on specs. The second thing is IIS Transform Manager, and this allows you to do on-demand transcoding and transmuxing and encryption from IIS. Essentially, you now have an interface within your IIS web server for encoding capabilities. And it can be, in fact, integrated with any number of encoders, but today it is already, when it comes to you, it's built in with integration with Expression Encoder. So essentially, if you have Expression Encoder and IIS Media Services, then you have the capability to use IIS Transform Manager. And we have an alpha release out there, which you could actually try today. It allows you to set up specified watch folders. So think if you have user-generated content and you have people dropping stuff into a folder somewhere, you can have that automatically run tasks against that content as it comes in. And it also includes as part of that, especially if you're doing large volumes, the idea of work queue and job management, so that you can have, in a sense, a whole framework around this that allows you to do local scheduling and HPC integration for scaling out. And I think I'll let John talk a little bit more about this because I'm sure I'm missing lots of great details, and I'm hoping he'll pick up more during his demo. There's also a task API. Essentially, we think of everything that you can do with Transform Manager in terms of tasks. So John will show you what some of the tasks are that are available today in Transform Manager. There will probably be things where you go, oh, that's cool. I wish it went from this format to that format. I wish there was a task for that. And in fact, there is a task API on MSDN if you want to build your own tasks. So with that, I'm going to have John come up and actually give us a demonstration of Transform Manager so you get a better sense from my words and mere bullet points about what it actually does.
Okay, check. Is it on?
Yeah.
All right, great. Hi, I'm John Deutscher, Program Manager for IIS Media Services. I'm going to talk about Transform Manager, which is the new module that we're introducing. This is out in alpha, as Chris said. I'm going to be showing you kind of a pre-release of the beta that we plan on having out in the next quarter. So here you can see IIS Manager, which you're probably all familiar with. Typically, you'll go in here and manage live smooth streaming or smooth streams. Also, we now have this node here in the tree called Transform Manager. And you can see in the interface, we have some simple setup where you can set your credentials for your service. Basically, it's a Windows service that runs on the box that watches all the watch folders and queues up jobs. And then we can create simple job templates. And job templates in Transform Manager are a series of tasks that you want to have operate on your media files. It's not limited to just media files. It can be just about anything you want to do, because essentially what we're doing is we're queuing these things up and we're handing them off either to the local task scheduler, or if you choose, you can hand those over to an HPC head node, at which point it will be farmed out to hundreds of compute nodes, whatever you have configured on an HPC cluster. In the future, we'll also be supporting the ability to, target an HPC head node in the cloud as well. So once I've got Transform Manager set up with my credentials and running, on this side I have a series of job monitors. I can see what's running currently, what's in the job queue, what jobs have finished successfully, what jobs may have failed, and what jobs I may have canceled, and then I can re-queue if I choose to. In my job templates section, you'll see some of the out-of-the-box job templates that we ship with. Some of the names here pretty familiar to you. So MP4 to smooth task will basically take an MP4 file and remux that on the fly to smooth streaming. We are not transcoding. We're just repackaging that file. And I'm going to show you a demonstration of that in a little bit. We also have job templates for taking WMV, Windows Media Files, and then converting those back over to VC1 Smooth Stream. So you may have a single bitrate library of single bitrate WMV files that you want to convert over to Smooth Streams. You just drop them into this folder, and then we will kick off Expression Encoder and then reconvert those over to multi-bitrate Smooth Streams. In addition, we also have a new task in the beta called the Smooth Protect task. And what that will do is I can set up and configure my keys. I'll go in here. I can set up my license acquisition URL and my key seed value for my PlayReady DRM server. And I may be getting those values either from a partner who supplied that service to me, or I may have licensed the PlayReady SDK and I'm running my own license server as well. And then, as Chris said, in the future on IIS, we'll have the capability to have these key seeds integrated directly in here so that if IIS is serving out those licenses, I could then pull those in here also. So just by setting my key seed value here on this task and the license acquisition URL, it will encrypt those files for me. And in this dialog box, let me show you an example of one that has multiple tasks. So for example, an MP4 file going to both H.264 Smooth Streams and also out to the Apple HTTP live streaming format. I have two tasks here. One of them is kicking off Expression Encoder 4. And then once that's done, we are running that through a quick remux to the Apple HTTP live streaming format. And in here, you can see some of the settings that we have available on the Apple HTTP live streaming format, such as the AES encryption, the ability to cut off your max bitrate, like Jamie showed you from within the IIS UI. You can strip off specific bitrates you don't want to go out to the HTTP live streaming files. And then you can also adjust the size of the segment. And then if you wanted to support the AES encryption, you could actually point to a specific key URI where the Apple QuickTime player will go out and get that AES license key as well. So I'm going to go over to watch folders now. So setting up watch folders is very simple. Here I've got a number of default watch folders that we ship with. And down here you can see they're pointing by default into the Transform Manager folder within the INET pub. This means you can do some cool things, like you can enable FTP or WebDAV on your IIS server and have users FTP and upload files directly into a root folder on INET pub. And then we will kick off the job to either transcode those to Smooth Streaming files or batch process those to whatever format you want and deliver them back into IIS. So it's a nice way to allow user upload and conversion. I'm going to go into this one, MP4 to Smooth Watch folder, really quick and show you how this works. So the MP4 to Smooth Watch folder, I'm going to grab some multi-bitrate MP4 files. So what I'm able to do here is I'm able to take standard H.264 encoded MP4 files, and I'm going to copy these over into this watch folder. And once they're there, I have this particular watch folder configured to wait for a manifest. So you're all familiar with the manifests that we use, the server manifest and the client manifests for Smooth Streaming. We use the same manifest format, same server manifest format, to kick off jobs when there are multiple files. So essentially this watch folder is not going to kick off as soon as it sees a file arrive. It's going to wait for a specific job manifest that tells it, what am I supposed to wait for? So here's an example of one of those manifests, and I'm telling it, basically wait for these particular bit rates of MP4 files plus this audio file, and when those have arrived, I want you to kick the job off. So then I'm going to take this XML file, drop it into my watch folder, and then as soon as Transform Manager sees that, it kicks the job off. Go back to my job monitor, and back in my job monitor, I can see my progress. I can see how many tasks it's going to execute, how many have completed. I can actually also watch the activity log. And then we have this API, as Chris was mentioning, up on MSDN for building tasks. And you can basically, if you create custom tasks, you can report back any information you want to see within this log. And then we write this log back out for you as well to grab. And then we create these job manifests on the fly. And you can see some of the information that's stored in these XML job manifests. And these job manifests can also be used to feed parameter overrides into Transform Manager. So say if you wanted to change some parameters about your job, you could send that in the XML file in the watch folder, and that will drive kind of the decision-making process for those tasks. So now that that job's finished, I can see it in my finished folder here. I'm going to go in and explore that job folder. And you'll see now I have not only my MP4 original files, but I also have smooth streaming files. Oops. Good over there. So here's all my ISMV smooth streaming files. And I can double-click one of these. And if you have Expression Encoder installed, you can double-click and playback ISMVs within Windows Media Player. And a quick sample here of what encryption looks like. If you take the encryption job, and if I take some existing smooth streaming content, so these are existing clear content in smooth streaming format, and I'm just going to drop into this DRM task folder. And you can take anything that's come off of the archive of IIS Media Server from a live broadcast that may have been in clear, and then you want to encrypt that later, or it's part of your library of already encoded smooth streaming files, and then run it through this job. And it's going to do the AES encryption for PlayReady on that and put all the default headers onto it that are required for PlayReady. And you'll see here, here's my original files, and I'm outputting to a protected folder. And once the job's done, it's going to, The job's finished. It's going to stick the protected files into that protected folder. There they are. So these are all ready to, I'll show you the manifest gets modified. Oops, client manifest. Open. Client manifest gets modified, and they'll add a protection. At the bottom, you'll see the protection header information there for PlayReady. And that is IIS Transform Manager. We're also looking at adding some additional support for things such as the ability to drop in composite manifest. If you're familiar with the composite manifest file format, it's kind of an edit decision list. So you can drop in composite manifest files along with your archives, and then we can send that over to Expression Encoder to create smaller clips. So you could say, if you've done a long broadcast and you only want to take certain segments or highlight clips out of that long broadcast, you could put an edit decision list into Transform Manager with your archive files, and then we will subclip those files out using Expression Encoder and deliver them back. Any questions? Yes, we currently don't have a public REST API for the job monitor. It is a WCF service that's running on the local box. You have to be an admin role to call that, but we are looking at adding an additional REST-based API on top of that, which you can then configure access to that with certificates or X509 authentication to get access to it.
My question was, if I have API running on the same server,
yes. Okay, so the question is, if you have some sort of a web service on your own box that you want to call out to from a task. So yeah, so using the task API that we have out there, you can write your own custom task, and in that task, it's just .NET code. You could call your web service, do whatever you want to with that call, and then report that back to the Transform Manager. Yes, it's out on MSDN right now. So if you take a look at on MSDN for Transform Manager, the task API is up there and it's documented. We are modifying it slightly for beta, so if you build on it now, you probably have to upgrade a little bit for your tasks, but it's out there to take a look at, and please send us feedback on whatever you want. Great. Thank you. You want to go ahead.
Can I start a task through an API, or does it always have to be through the watch folder?
We are looking at adding submit via REST API in post-beta, so that is on the roadmap for post-beta.
Okay, and then would that also include that would be, I presume, for the manifest, but could you pull the input, MP4s or whatever, from a non-file system source?
Like source it off of an FTP link or source it off
An Azure bucket?
Cloud bucket, yes. Upload, download was something we have on our backlog, so that's something we are looking at as well.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Kevin. Oh, is there another question?
Tim's got a question.
Hi, Hey, John, you mentioned you could override template settings in the job manifest, the XML.
Yes, yeah.
So could you do that with KeySeed and
yeah,
Laurel?
So the PlayReady, so the PlayReady encryption values you can send in. There's one thing we're going to look at post-beta, which is being able to actually encrypt those values. So providing an X509 certificate as well to encrypt those values before they go in, because there's some customers that don't want to have their KeySeed values on the the disk.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's definitely something that we're looking at.
Thanks.
Yep.
Any other questions? All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, I'll go through a few more slides, and then Eric Schmidt will do a demo for us. I'll talk about that as we get closer. All right, next we're going to talk about rough cut editing. Oh, let's grab the screen back here. There's already been at least one or two references today to rough cut editing. Let me tell you a little bit more about that. We had some goals around rough cut editing. Basically, this was when we were starting with the Olympics. I'm waiting for the clicker to respond. It's not responding. Excellent. Okay, so the idea was that during live events, when you're doing something like a football game or a sporting event, you want to have the ability to put up highlights of that event right away. So not wait for several hours for one encoding batch process to stop, go cut on an expensive workstation, and then re-encode and then post the clips online. So you want, you know, really it's around, in today's information age, it's around, especially with social media driving a lot of traffic to the internet, when things happen, you want to have, you know, content available for somebody as quickly as possible where they, you know, somebody heard, oh, they just made this winning touchdown, you want that clip online right away so that somebody can get to it without waiting for a whole bunch of processes to run in the meantime. And ideally, you want to do it where you're repurposing those existing assets. You've encoded the content once. If you can avoid encoding it again, why not? Especially if it's already cached out there at all those thousands of edge caches on a CDN, let's say. Why have somebody download something again from an origin server if it's already cached out there and you just need a different length of that content, let's say. And we want it to be able so that it was location independent, platform independent, so that you didn't have something where you had to go buy an expensive workstation, which had to be in one place, which had cost a lot. You know, you want to be able to say, hey, I have content. You're an editor. I want you to take that content, edit it up, and post those highlights right away from wherever you are and on whatever platform you're running. And then to reduce the cost, I already talked about workstations, and then also just the idea if you encode something and then you re-encode it as a highlight, now you're having to store basically the same content again, even though it's really identical to what you put out there the first time, just in a shorter edited format. So what we came up with was something called Rough Cut Editor. I jumped ahead of myself. We wanted also something that fit in with encoders and other workflow tools. Okay. So we came up with something called Silverlight Rough Cut Editor. And this is what we use for the 2010 Olympics. It's built in Silverlight, so again, like to the goals of avoiding expensive workstations and being able to go anywhere, because it's Silverlight, it runs across platforms. You can run it on your Mac, run it on your PC, run it wherever you are where you have internet access. And we used it successfully. Here you actually see a screenshot of content from the Olympics. This is actually from a, looks like, Canadian hockey game. And what somebody is doing here is they've taken a bunch of clips, relevant information, dropped it into a directory, and they're slicing and dicing and essentially doing, as John referred to earlier, is creating an edit decision list, a composite manifest, which then gets published. A user comes onto a site, they essentially download that composite manifest, smooth streaming manifest, and it's essentially saying, go pull these fragments and these fragments and these fragments from the content that I pushed out there 30 minutes ago and just watch those pieces that are relevant for this highlight. So it makes use of all those existing content and infrastructure and essentially gives users, although it's transparent to them, a new way of consuming that same content. So it's available for free. It's at rce.codeplex.com. It's free. Source code's there. Feel free to edit it, build products on it, what have you. But essentially, we want to make it really easy for you to take smooth streaming content and repurpose it. So the next part we want to talk about is something looking forward a little bit here. Oh, yes, Mr. Miles, you have a question. Shall I bring you a microphone?
No, I'll ask
Okay.
Continuing development of Roughcut Editor, what's the plan with Microsoft? How much are you doing? Is there a roadmap?
Do you know the answer?
Roughcut Editor itself?
So the question was, what is the roadmap for Roughcut Editor? And I'll defer to Eric Schmidt to answer that question.
Yeah, so we're continuing development. So what we did for the Olympics was a port specifically for Olympics workflow. And then since then, we've taken a step back and taken requests from other partners, other publishers that have different workflows than live sports, as well as working with other kind of CMS-related vendors that would benefit from this type of solution. So we're continuing development. I'm actually going to show you a demo of some of our vNext features, and we'll continue work like we have with our other frameworks for our CE. So we'll continue to open source it, continue to evolve.
Which is a perfect segue for us to see the demonstration on the upcoming content management system from Eric.
Cool. All right. So the one thing I'm going to do before I get into the CMS is actually take a step back and talk about the other framework efforts, because it kind of, I think, makes a little bit more sense than jumping straight into the CMS, at least from my view of the world. I need to switch. Which PCs are we on here?
PC
2? Okay, let me broadcast here. Hopefully that comes out. All right, cool. So in the spirit of every session that has different slides, I'll just... how much time do I have? All right, I'll talk fast. So thanks. So as Chris said, my name is Eric Schmidt. I work inside of the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group, and I see a lot of well-known faces in here. My team is the team primarily responsible for delivering our key media and Silverlight engagements, so things like the Olympics, Sunday Night Football, the inauguration, et cetera. Hey, Scott. That's what my team does. So we mainly work with publishers and content owners, but behind the scenes, what we're also doing is we're building frameworks to help replicate the learnings that we experience through these events, because these are very large-scale events, and also try to take the architecture as well that we build for these events and put them in the framework so we can make them reusable. We have three efforts going on right now. We have one based around consumption models, one around management, and one around monitoring. How many of you have used the Silverlight Media Framework? Okay, a couple of you?
You don't have to.
Okay. There's a couple of things to understand, so going back to this question about continued development. One, all these efforts are open source, so you can go today and download all the code, as Chris talked about, for RCE, as well as for the Silverlight Media Framework. We're also working on a telemetry project that I'll talk a little bit about. One of the key goals is to light up smooth streaming. So as the smooth streaming and IIS team are off kicking butt, continuing to evolve the core platform, we're building these frameworks in order to light up those features to make them even more actionable in real-world scenarios. And the last piece is to ensure extensibility. So it's great to build a framework, but if you can't extend it and let partners integrate their own magic sauce or their own IP, it's not really a framework. So that's one of the things we definitely focus on is extensibility. So Silverlight Media Framework right now, we're kind of at the end of life cycle in terms of features. We basically have everything, most everything that the core scenarios people have asked for, things like a robust timeline for fast forwarding and scrubbing, bit rate meters, volume control, extensibility for branding, and also the ability to implement different advertising models. How many of you have been watching Sunday Night Football? So Sunday Night Football, this is probably, I think, one of our best examples for at least an implementation on top of the Silverlight Media Framework. The folks at Vertigo built this. One of the key stories behind this is the previous year, whenever we used the framework, the player looked a lot different in terms of the UI. This year, the UI looks a lot different, but the actual player, the player is the same. So that's one of the nice pieces about this is we were able to reuse all the DVR controls, the basic layout, et cetera, except now we've done some different stuff with pip windows and this little window that you see on the timeline, and that was completely based on business needs. Now, one of the other players that we just finished building was for the PDC, and I'm going to jump into this a little bit. And this kind of takes the SMURF, as we call it, the Silverlight Media Framework, and pushes it really to its limits. So for the PDC, we also pulled in features like multi-language support. So we had up to 5 languages for PDC content. In order to make that work, we also had to work with our encoding vendors as well as the IIS team. We also had live closed captioning support. And we also had multicam support, so you could switch back and forth between the two screens. All those features, other than multicam right now, are available inside of SMF in order for you to extend. So let me take a quick jump out here and go into the player, because this is kind of fun to see kind of post-mortem actually what was built. Go into the guide. How many of you like Mark Krasinovich? He's like one of my favorite speakers, so we'll go find him. Let's see, Mark Krasinovich. There he goes, inside Windows Azure. Oh, I'm not on the proper network right now. Let me try another one. No, sorry, I switched networks when it was coming on. So let me go back to my slides. View from current slide. So the point that I want to make about this is that this implementation, and we're in the process of repackaging this back up to actually show as a sample application for what you can do with the Silverlight Media Framework. I'm really proud about all the accessibility and translation work that we've done. So we got a huge response from folks in China, folks in Japan, et cetera, saying, hey, thank you. Wow, I can actually watch this content live versus having to wait a couple weeks until it was translated. So from current slide, oops, there you go. All right, so in 2.2, we also add some additional features people asked for. So one was URL frame linking. So we now have a mechanism that you can go ahead and say you want to share a particular frame from that video, and we automate all that process for you, both for the sharing as well as the resolution. So this is basically deep linking, but deep linking to the actual frame instead of sharing the entire video. Talked about support for multiple audio tracks. We have full support for global styling. And one of the other things that we made a commitment to do in this last release is Windows Phone 7 support. So this last 2.2 release, we also released a fully feature-rich. It doesn't have feature parity because there are certain things that we can't do on the phone, but it's a very feature-rich support for Windows Phone 7. And I think you guys actually demoed that this morning, right? You took... Cool. All right. That's $2, by the way. Not about the money, but in terms of the ease of use here, it's literally the exact same code. So if you want to write a Windows Phone 7 smooth streaming application, if you're using SMF, it's the exact same code that you use in order to write for the client. Here's the architecture. I won't dive into this, but the main thing I want to focus on is pretty much everything that the framework does is all based on a plugins model. So we have a plugin model for smooth streaming. We have a plugin model to do progressive download. We have a plugin model to manage heuristics. We have a plugin for marker management, et cetera. And the reason why we have this plugin model is that you can come in and say, well, hey, I don't like the way you did this. I want to implement my own implementation. This is specifically important for things like advertising models and for monitoring and telemetry models. Most people aren't coming to us saying, hey, we want to build a new scrubber because we don't like how you built your scrubber. Most people are saying, I have my own ad delivery mechanism that I'd like to implement. So what's next? We're working on what we basically call kind of an HTML5 kind of port. We will gracefully degrade from a smooth stream implementation into an HTML5 implementation. Analytics support for both ads as well as usage, and I'm going to show you a sneak peek of that in a minute. And we'll have fully compliant VAST and MAST implementations for those of you who are focusing on VAST and MAST. And this is also a pretty good time right now. We got about 4 weeks left until we really, really lock down on the rest of the features. If there are other things that you want, please let us know. All right, so quick demo. This is now my favorite demo to do in the world. Visual Studio, how many people do you have Visual Studio? All right, cool. You want to build a new smooth streaming application? I've already installed the Silverlight Media Framework 2.2 in the machine. I will say one thing. We are a couple days behind from releasing the MSI to actually automate this. So the bits that you can download today from CodePlex, you have to go through a couple hoops to actually replicate this. But in about 2 days, probably Monday, we'll have the MSI up there in order to replicate. So we're going to do new smooth streaming application. So that's part of our install. We actually do all the Visual Studio integration for you. And I'll call this test smooth demo. And hit OK. OK. We go ahead and create the Silverlight application for you. We set the appropriate references and start building out all the base YAML references for you. There's the player. There's your start and stop buttons, closed captioning support, etc. Go ahead and hit run. And let's see what happens here. This better work, Scott. I'm just kidding. Yeah, close everything down. Yeah, start. Yeah. There we go. Buck Bunny. Big Buck Bunny. I love Big Buck Bunny. So there you go. That's it. Silverlight Media Framework. So from here, the interesting piece is this demo is fun because people are like, okay, that was really easy. But if you didn't have the framework, what you'd have to do in order to get this point, it probably, on average, take you about maybe 20 minutes to actually get everything the way that you wanted it. So this is nice, but then, well, maybe I don't like doing everything through automation and through XAML. So let me go down here and give the player a name. Name equals player. And go back into the page. So then what we do is provide you the ability to then say, all right, playlist dot add dot, oops. New. So everything in the framework is also completely strong typed, and you can do whatever you want. So in this case, we have full playlist support. If I wanted to have a playlist that played Big Buck Bunny and then Big Buck Bunny again and then Big Buck Bunny in Chinese or Big Buck Bunny in reverse, go ahead and create a playlist and dynamically add it on the fly. Or I could do the same thing as XAML. So any questions? Yep. Oh, okay, yeah. So, good question. So I'm going to show you a demo in a minute about creating kind of dynamic assets based on a previous asset. So I had an existing smooth asset. I should have probably had another an asset, you know, to put in there. But you can put any type of assets you want. We also have support, and that's support that we added. We have support for different types of assets. So you can have a playlist now that has, it could be a smooth stream, and then it could be a progressive download. So you could build up a playlist that had multiple types of content in the playlist.
So is there an inbuilt speech engine I can use, or is that something I need to bring in and plug in there? So I understand that there's an English to Chinese conversion happening.
Yep.
Do I need my own engine to do this translation, or does it come all together as part of?
No. Yeah, the only thing that we respect is we'll respect multiple audio tracks. So we look in the manifest to see if you have other audio tracks or if you have text tracks for closed captions. So those are the two things that we respect. Yeah, how they get there is a different scenario. So, yeah. All right. So that's SMF. I could spend, and I did at Mix, I spent a good hour and a half going into all the features, talked about extensibility. The best thing to do is just download and start playing with it. We have full documentation. The object model is very clear to understand. It's a great product. It's actually a great framework. It's not really a product for us. So if you want to build robust video applications, use it. That's what we use. All right, so that's SMF. So the next piece is how do I manage my content? And we just came off of the PDC where we used what I'm about to show you. We're in the process of building what we call a lightweight CMS system. The goal of this is to basically build a solution that you can manage media assets really at a project level and then also target multiple platforms, maybe smooth streaming or maybe iOS, different types of platforms that you want to hit. We also wanted to make sure that there is approval processes in, as relates to what you can do with the CMS. So a lot of people say, hey, my CMS is my file system, right? I have files and they get encoded somewhere and I move them someplace else. But whenever you're talking about, like with the Olympics, where you're doing, say, 34 live events at the same time, a file system isn't going to cut it whenever you want to do some type of automation and approval routing on top of that content. So it's another thing that we targeted for this CMS system. Security model is also important because you want to have certain people who could have rights to say encode versus not encode or publish new content. The other things that we wanted to do with the CMS is there's one thing is the store content, but if you're doing a live event, how do you automate the encoders that you want to use in order to create the content? And also, how do you automate the origins that are ultimately going to deliver that content through IIS? So there's always this constant handshake that has to happen between when does an encoder start, when does an origin start, and ultimately, when do you want to publish content? So down at the bottom, those are the other two keys. And we also wanted to implement the rough cut editor, because if we have existing content like we have with the Olympics, and you just saw Apollo Ohno break another world record, and you want to cut that live event, it'd be nice to have that all in one tool inside of the same CMS that was doing the live broadcast. You've already seen this slide. Right before I jump in, kind of burn this kind of taxonomy into your head. Everything that I'm about to show you in the CMS is based on these basic asset workflows. Whenever we ship the CMS, we'll have a bunch of predefined ones for you. So, for example, this is live asset workflow. We have a VOD asset workflow. We have an RCE asset workflow. We have an asset workflow to do transcoding. And then you can also go and build your own asset workflows. All right. So let's do this. You've already seen, you saw Chris's cool demo this morning, which I thought was awesome, where you created in like 2 minutes, you did all the magic, right? Very cool. So let's take that one step further. So I'm in my CMS. The CMS is built on SharePoint 2010, so that's kind of the only thing you would need to buy if you don't already have that once we release this package. So I'm going to go in here, click on Assets. I'm using all the assets that we this implementation is what we used for the PDC. So you'll see here on the side, you'll see some graphics from the PDC, and I'm going to go into items up at the top and say new item. We use all the same things that we're familiar to with in SharePoint. So you're not recreating a UX model. I'm going to create a new live event asset, and as part of the CMS, you can also extend the metadata for content. This is the metadata templates that we're using for the PDC. You can go in and override these however you want. So say Chris is cool. That's the name of our session. And we'll go ahead and that's the session ID. Come down here. Some other information we have to fill out. Let's keep going. When do we want this to start? Well, we want this to start actually today. And we'll start it at, say, 5 p.m. And let me type in some fake data here because we have a thumbnail associated with this, but we don't care. All right. Oops. Sorry, I'm in remote desktop. So there's also a whole other a bunch of other information that you can. We have this concept of associating related content. So for the PDC, we had things like associating speakers and documents, et cetera. For the Olympics, we had athletes, time metadata, et cetera. It's completely extensible for how you want to use it. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and save this. What do we call it again? Chris is cool, is that right?
Yeah.
All right, so let me hit save. All right. Oops. Oops. Sorry, hold on a second. Oh, that's why I didn't do it. Okay. Chris is cool. One of our business validation rules is that we had to have a Twitter hashtag for all of our content. All right, so now we've saved it. So now we've, in essence, created this asset. I need to approve it now, so I'm going to go ahead and go into, say, Manage New Assets. This is part of our workflow, so I've created the asset, but now I have to approve it before it can go one step further because we just don't want any Joe Schmo like me creating new live assets and pushing them out to the PDC site. So let's go in here to the asset, and by default we bring up this player to try to play back content, but we're not approved yet, so let me go in and approve this item. Go ahead and hit approve. I can put notes in if I want. All right, cool. So now that's been approved. If I go to my live dashboard, what this live dashboard is going to do is it's going to go through and look at all the times for content that's potentially scheduled for today. So if you see down at the bottom right here, there's my item. So we look at the time. We put it on the grid. You can off to the side. There's a little calendar. But this is fundamentally the piece of content that I want to now automate an encoder and a publishing point for. So I'm going to go ahead and click on it. Hopefully, so there's the information. Chris is cool. By the way, this is exactly what we were doing during the PDC. So as Balmer was on stage and he's ready to go, and the rest of all the sessions. This is fundamentally what we also did for the Olympics. I'm going to go ahead and hit start. Two things are going to happen. I'm going to send a start message to our encoder. In this case, we're using Expression Coder. We also have automation for Inlet and for some other encoder manufacturers. Once we get a start success back, we're going to then turn around and go to our origin server and say, hey, are you ready to go? And if those two things are ready to go, we're going to start pushing bits. Now, just because we're pushing bits doesn't necessarily mean that we're on air, because we can see frames, but then we want to actually be able to push them out to a player. Then we'll go from start mode to on-air mode. So let's go ahead and see if this works. So it's going to go out. The expression encoder that we're using is actually pulling through a file feed, but it is doing a live encode. So we've started. Now I want to go on air. Come on, baby. The server's sitting in Argentina, so it really is. So in a couple seconds here, we should see, hopefully, we should see a little refresh, hopefully. Let me try to go ahead and play. Yeah, it's supposed to automatically go. Come on. It's not going to do it for me, is it? Oh, there we go. All right, just took a second. So that's, in essence, the test feed that's underlying this. We're actually pulling one of the high-res feeds that we've already previously broadcast. That's it. There's no more, like, going over to Expression Encoder and saying start and going into media services, et cetera. All that stuff, that's all stuff fine to do. But if you want to seamlessly basically say, I want to schedule a set of broadcasts, I want to start them, I want to stop them, and then ultimately what we do as part of the system is we export a schedule file. You have complete control over this, so I'm going to go ahead and show you the schedule file. We export a schedule file that contains all the metadata for everything that you want to possibly use. So in this case, this is what powers the player. So if I go and I find Chris is cool. Well, it's probably not pushed out yet, but if I go down, I can show you, for example, here's the session ID, here's all the content. Everything inside of the CMS system gets exported. How much time do I have left? Not much, like 2 minutes? All right. All right. So the last thing that I want to quickly show you, I won't show you the whole demo, is what we do with composite manifest. With the PDC, I already have about 80 sessions in here, so I'm going to go in to my assets, and I'm going to create a new item called an RCE asset. Let's say Chris RCE. Go ahead and save this. Great. Oh, sorry. Hold on. Well, I'll just go in. I'll go in a different one for you, save some time. I'm not going to be able to do this fast enough for you. So in essence, what we've done is that same RCE view that Chris showed you on that slide, instead of it being in a separate tool, it's now pulled directly into the CMS. And then in our Explorer view, we will pull in all the content that's available to you in that CMS. And you can do things like take 2 minutes from one clip, take 2 minutes from another clip, take 2 minutes from another clip, go ahead and put them into a visual timeline, and then push out a job to our workflow manager, and it will create that composite manifest and create a new publishing point for you. So, anything else? So we're on track right now. We'll be publishing all this code. We'll do an update to the Silverlight Media Framework in early January. We're going to do our first push of the CMS code in early February. There's one other part of this, but I ran out of time, that I won't talk about.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Sure. So.
All right. We're getting down to the end game here, and I think we actually had quite a bit more to cover, so let me see how fast I have to go now. No, this isn't too bad. Okay, so I'll go fairly quickly through this. What I'll do is mention, may I have it by show of hands, how many folks here are in the Silverlight Partner Program? Okay, pretty good number. All right, how many are aware that there's a session after this that sort of continues this discussion? Not very many. Okay, so for those of you in that program, there is we sort of continue this discussion for another hour starting at 4 o'clock. So if we run out of time and you are interested and want to go sort of deeper into where we're going in the future, please come back for that session. We do have about 10 more minutes to go, and I will wrap up a number of things on that workflow that I hadn't gotten to yet. The nice thing is Eric covered some of them, so I won't have to spend as much time on some things that I had planned to. I'll talk real quick about this, reporting, logging, and analytics. I mentioned IIS Advanced Logging earlier, and Eric really touched on with Silverlight Media Framework some of the third-party integration that you can do through Silverlight Media Framework, and which is integrated down to the smooth streaming technology underneath, so that if you are doing a live event like Sunday Night Football or the Olympics, you can tie into Conviva for real-time analytics on your delivery, to Omniture for web analytics, and to DoubleClick for advertising. And of course, if you want to, you can build out a third-party extension for that as well. The Silverlight Analytics Framework, which we've also touched on a little bit here, is actually similar to Silverlight Media Framework. It's in the sense that it's another framework built for Silverlight that integrates with Silverlight Media Framework and smooth streaming to allow you to do logging of all your experiences. And if you go to msaf.codeplex.com, you'll actually find source code there for that analytics framework and a long list of folks who have already built out complete extensions and everything using this framework. So you'll see a lot of well-known analytics firms listed there who can already integrate seamlessly into smooth streaming through that extensibility model and the Silverlight Analytics Framework. All right, next I'm going to just touch on PlayReady as part of the DRM layer that really goes across encoding, delivery, and consumption. Today we support PlayReady and smooth streaming throughout a number of different components. The format that we use, that we've defined, that allows you to do smooth streaming, the file format, we actually dubbed, essentially we have taken as a file format the ISO base format that's used for MP4 and taken use of the fragmented capabilities that it defines to do what we call fragmented MP4. And we defined that we added some additional definition around that for how you do that with protection. So, DRM essentially, and we use it specifically with PlayReady, and we call it the protected interoperable file format, and publish that as sort of a spec up on our website, and it's I'll jump ahead and just mention that's already as our smooth streaming file format, it's been adopted by Netflix and by DECE, the digital entertainment something content ecosystem. The code name for that, or the marketing name now for that, is Ultraviolet. If you're interested in that, that's basically the idea. For those of you not familiar with it, it's essentially where 50 companies in the entertainment and technology businesses like Microsoft and Warner Brothers and Sony and other folks have come together and built together a consortium saying, look, we're all creating content, we're all encoding it in different ways, we're all delivering it in different ways. If I have a consumer that wants to buy a piece of content and they go to Best Buy or they go to Walmart, they should be able to get that content where I only encode it as the content creator or the infrastructure provider one time, and they get it through a single infrastructure on the back end so that they don't have to buy it three different times if they go to three different vendors. It essentially provides a common infrastructure and framework around which you can build a complete system for delivering your content going forward as digital assets, and making it easier for the users to get it, and making it easier for you to deliver it without encoding it 25 different times to distribute it through 25 different channels. Coming back to PlayReady and where that's tied in, then so that PlayReady is also one of the defined protections, certainly when PIF works with any kind of DRM, and specifically here, and where it's been adopted by DEC and Netflix, it's using PlayReady, or can use PlayReady. It's also within Smooth Streaming, we have PlayReady right in there with Format SDK that I mentioned earlier. We also have a PlayReady Smooth Streaming, Smooth Streaming Client. It used to be called the Player SDK. Now it's a Smooth Streaming Client. If you're more interested in digging down into the actual technology on the client side that drives Smooth Streaming, you can go to is.net/smooth-client, and you'll see information there about that. And then the one-click PlayReady that I mentioned earlier. And then the last part is really just talking about the client. We've touched on it all the way through this, how Silverlight fits into this, and now I just want to get a little bit more specific about the client-side technology. The first is around talking about how Silverlight plays out across different screens. You know, you're probably aware Silverlight is now in over two-thirds of desktops worldwide. So there used to be a concern when Silverlight first came out, well, it's only on 10% of desktops or 30% of desktops. Now it's on over two-thirds. So it's making, we're finding that when you create compelling content for people, they will go ahead and say, yes, please install the Silverlight plugin if they don't already have it. And for most people now, it's already there through big events like Tour de France or Wimbledon or Sunday Night Football or the Olympics. The next thing is that it's available now. You can get it today. It's running on Nokia devices. We demonstrated this morning. It's running on Windows phones. So now you can reach a broader set of mobile devices. It's coming soon to set-top box in the form of Windows Embedded. We already showed some demos at previous events, but Windows Embedded is a great vehicle for distributing to set-top boxes. And a lot more folks are about to deploy their versions of set-top boxes running on Windows Embedded, where you get all the full functionality that a Windows 7 embedded operating system gives you, with a lot of the built-in features that otherwise, if you were building a set-top box, you might have to build from scratch. And so with that, you get all the Silverlight and Smooth Streaming capabilities that you see here today. And then because we're building essentially one set of streams that goes across all these devices, and with Silverlight, as Eric mentioned, it works great in the browser, but the same code that you use in the browser also works on the phone. You're getting that consistent quality and experience across all of those endpoints without having to redefine the player each time you go to a different endpoint. I won't have to spend time on Silverlight Media Framework because Eric's already covered it for me, so that's where we save a little time. Also skip the next slide here, which just talked a little bit more about architecture of Smooth Streaming Client. And we've already done the demo there. I'll mention a couple of other things that you may not have caught that are interesting from the Silverlight perspective. One is that we're doing a lot of 3D work now. And what I'm showing here, we've demonstrated this since NAB last year, but the ability to do smooth streaming, so streaming from, say, 300 kilobits per second up to 720p in 3D. So folks at home, whether they're wearing the Anaglyph glasses or the Shutter glasses, can watch this great experience in 3D with their movies or with their gaming content. In the example here, it's actually NASCAR. Folks using it there, we used it for Masters Golf. So anytime you have a 3D experience now, you don't have to just deliver it on a shiny disk or over a cable network. You can also do it just using your IP network and Silverlight and Smooth Streaming. And then the other thing that we showed off at IBC was the ability to add surround sound audio with Silverlight. Even though we're still currently distributing with two channels, using something like SRS 5.1, you get a great experience where you actually get that multiplexed surround sound experience just using a Silverlight player without any real significant changes to the Silverlight player itself. So it's fairly easy to do. You can go to their site and actually get information about the tools and everything you need to do that. But now if you want to actually give folks that great experience, especially if you're building out-of-browser, living room type experiences, you can do that now with Silverlight as well. In terms of features, Scott covered a lot of this. Scott Guthrie covered a lot of these during his keynote earlier. I'll just highlight some of them again in case you missed any of them or you got in a little late. First is the ability within the Silverlight runtime now in Silverlight 5 to do trick play from negative 32x to 32x. Very nice there. You're able to do that today, in fact, with smooth streaming. But if you're actually not doing a smooth streaming presentation for some reason, Silverlight will do that for you in Silverlight 5. That included the point that pitch corrections now in, I should have actually updated the slide, it should say from 0x to 2x. So like in Windows Media Player today, in the enterprise or in training scenarios where you have to listen to the boring college professor or whatever and you actually want him to go a little bit faster, if he's talking really slowly, you can speed him up with pitch correction using Silverlight in Silverlight 5. We also have low latency sound, and this is good if you have sort of if you've built a game or something around Silverlight and you can't wait a millisecond for Silverlight to spin up its normal media stack and give you the ping sound that you're looking for. Now we have low latency sound built on the XNA platform, same thing that's used for Xbox gaming. There's also power awareness, which means if you're watching a video, computer knows enough now not to go to sleep because you're actually watching a video. And it also knows now that when you're done watching the video, it's okay to go to sleep if that's how you've set up the settings on your computer. There's also remote control support, which is great if you've built out a 10-foot UI experience for that living room or out-of-browser experience, perhaps. Now you can actually integrate with remote control, so you can just point the remote at your Silverlight player and get the response that you want as a user sitting on the couch. There are also some DRM advancements specifically around key rotation as we go forward, and we can talk more about that. Essentially allowing the ability to switch seamlessly from one DRM asset to another DRM asset that has a separate license tied to it. And then the last thing is, and perhaps the most significant for many folks, is hardware decode. Not only we're showing it mostly with H.264, but it's not limited to H.264. So now you can have a great experience if you have a good GPU on the box. You can be just running a lightweight notebook or netbook that has a decent GPU and get full 1080p playback. I mentioned earlier Smooth Streaming Player, Smooth Streaming Client. I really need to update my slides. I apologize, Michelle. So we have a few things as far as Smooth Streaming Client goes. Basically, we're coming out with a porting kit that allows you to reach clients that cannot play back Silverlight with Smooth Streaming. So if you have, for whatever reason, somebody's decided, oh, I can't run Silverlight on my platform, you can actually go and build a porting kit that will now reach them with Smooth Streaming. So you can do things similar to what you saw on the iOS today, but actually have that kind of playback experience for those devices, say a Linux set-top box or something. And in fact, at IBC, we showed off a box by NetGem, a set-top box running Linux that essentially was running a prototype of the client porting kit so you could play back smooth streaming. And that is it for this session. Are there any questions at this time? Okay, great. If you're part of the, if you have questions where you don't want to ask out loud, feel free to come up here afterwards and ask questions. If you have questions afterwards, you think of them later, feel free to send me an email. If you're part of the Silverlight Partner Program and want to get into a deeper discussion about some of your needs and where we're going, then please come back in 25 minutes. Take a break now. Come back in 25 minutes, and we'll have that discussion. Thanks for coming.